You want to call?
We do have a quorum, so we'll call the meeting of the Ways and Means Committee to order. Couple of items on the agenda. First of all, we have the minutes from March 24th. Representative Davids has read them thoroughly. Representative Davids moves the minutes, Ways and Means, March 24th, 2010. Any corrections, additions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Then carried. We're going to change a little bit of the agenda as we go through to accommodate people. Representative Huntley said he wanted to go to the ball game. Was that?
I can only wait.
Is he going to share the tickets?
Well, he does have somebody that needs to go to the Senate and have a hearing. So we'll go down to House File 3279. Representative Huntley, would you like to make a motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 3279 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Everyone has heard the motion. Do you want to give a brief explanation?
This is a department health information exchange bill. It relates to how you respond to a federal law that requires that there needs to be a way to send electronically health records or health information from one site to another site, and that it must it must be done in a way that meets the federal requirements. If the state does the job right and the feds like it, the feds will then pay our health care providers an enhanced rate for some of these things, and that could be worth between $400 and $800 million to health care providers in the state of Minnesota. Currently there are basically two groups in the state that have started to set this up. There could be many more. And this simply says that those two groups have to be able to send messages back and forth to each other and meet all the federal requirements. And as I've talked about in the other committee, I often vacation in Wyoming. And where I am in Wyoming, if I got in, I crashed my mountain bike again. If it was serious, they'd haul me down to Fort Collins, Colorado. And it would be what the federal government's trying to do is get away that my health care records from Duluth, Minnesota could be sent to someplace else, either down here to the cities. A more likely thing is if you vote this down, I might have massive chest pains and they'll have to haul me down to Regents Hospital. And I would hope that Regents could get my medical records out of the Duluth SMDC system. Now, I have Dr. Golden here to answer questions or give a slightly more detailed version of the bill.
Well, let's see if there are, usually don't take testimony per se in the committee, but if there are some questions available, Representative Abler.
Well, this is a Ways and Means Committee. Does it spend or make any money?
Well, I was looking at that as well. I think on page 17 of the bill, there's an appropriation of $104,000 in 2011 from the special revenue. And I would assume that that's from an account that is not, that has some money in it.
There's going to be registered as one of these organizations. You're going to have to pay a fee. That's been reduced some. I will say there was some controversy originally, but now the two sides that were contesting this have both agreed to what's in the bill. But it's any expense would be covered by the fees that it takes to get one of these licenses.
Mr. Haber, aren't there some grants that this helps to spend too? Is this the one that does that, all the federal, is there some money that's federal money that spends, or is that a different bill?
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, there was a large grant that has come to the state, and that money has been distributed to various groups
already
to implement what the feds are paying. So most of the startup cost is paid for by the federal government.
Representative Holberg, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Huntley, there wasn't a fiscal note in our packets, but Mr. Marks had a fiscal note on the Senate file, the second engrossment. Do you know if that's the same as the language being presented to us, or?
There's one slight difference in the Senate language, but I don't think there's been any fiscal impact with that one. So the fiscal note should be the same.
But then, Representative Holbrook, the appropriation is in the last section of the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm aware of that. Can somebody tell me if there were any costs to the Department of Administration or Enterprise Technology?
Can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Jim Golden, the Director of Health Policy at the Department of Health. Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, this bill does not have any costs for the Department of Administration or the Office of Enterprise Technology.
Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chair, then on page 3, section 3, they're going to do this evaluation out of the goodness out of their heart, or are they going to get paid out of this special revenue account too, or?
Mr. Goldman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, the language that is in section 3 is language that was suggested by Representative Kahn in the Finance Committee. This is just to help clarify the responsibilities that OET already has under Chapter 16E with regard to state agency information systems. This essentially is our activities that OET is already required to do for state agency IT systems. And this is just clarifying that any such information system that a state agency would construct to connect up with the larger private sector health information organization is also subject to the 16E requirements.
And
Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, does the Senate language have that language? I mean, in looking at the fiscal note, admin never signed off on the fiscal note. So I'm just wondering, I mean, is there a fiscal note on the House file?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, this is not in the Senate language, but the department supports this language and would like to have it kept in the bill. So when we get the Senate bill, we'll have to.
Representative Holbrook, to answer your question, I don't think there is a fiscal note on this particular bill. I remember the testimony in Finance Committee when Representative Kahn offered that amendment, and it was indeed a clarification to make sure that there's that coordination that they're already doing or supposed to be doing.
Well, and Mr. Chair, as a member of the State Government Finance Committee, there's this tension between their responsibilities and their budget, and so that's why I'm just curious. And when you say that the agency supports it, I'm sure you're saying the Department of Health supports it, but does the Department of Administration, are they signed up and raring to go on this as well?
Representative Kahn, can you answer it? Use your mic if you would.
Yes, I can, because I've put this in after putting it into a similar place where we kind of have private agencies doing things with in a bill of Julie Bunn's that was to deal with small, with deed. And we did talk to OET. They thought that the, I'm not sure about.
Can you use your mic?
They thought, I'm not sure about this one. But the language in that bill, it specifically said, as soon as you said meets all standards, that it covers these standards. But the problem is if we don't, the cost is going to be extraordinarily high. I urge everyone to read the OET's report on security and to see, and the thought of having a system developed by and also think about the other thing I've been concerned about is 38 separate data centers, separate and distinct siloed data centers in terms of supplying security and following what's happening to them. And the thought that you'd give a private entity entrance into the state computer system with connections and not have them responsible for it is really scary. And OET gets most of its budget by chargebacks to the agencies. So, and you know, I think it's, and they were, they're aware of this language and they support this language wherever. They think that you may not need it because, you know, because as soon as you have a state system, it's the language in 16E is very strong about things having to go through finance. But it's to my mind, it's too tied to an appropriation before the appropriation, if an appropriation is going through 16E kicks in. And this makes sure that when private guys are doing things that connect with the state system, that 16E will kick in.
And
Representative Holbrook?
Mr. Chair and Chair Kahn, I understand all that. I just feel better if there was a fiscal note that they signed off on that said whether or not they were going to look for reimbursement out of the special revenue fund or not, and I don't see that. So,
well, the prop,
Representative Kahn,
you know, it's that if it's covered by existing law, which of which the general theory is that any of these things are covered by existing law, it just makes it makes them more aware of it. You know, it's not clear that the issue of whether it should be in the forecast or whether it should be covered in the
if it is a chargeback, and it would be charged back to the Department of Health, and they're comfortable with this, so it would be.
Well, Mr. Chair,
the problem about asking whether it's in the Senate language is we find that almost nothing dealing with this is ever in the Senate language.
Well, and
Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chair, that's why it might not be $104,000 from the special revenue fund. It may be $124,000 or whatever, but having no documentation of admin taking a look at this, we just won't know that. Maybe it can be figured out before it's taken up on the House floor.
Is there someone from the Department of Administration that's willing in the audience for this particular question? Mr. Marks, would you request a fiscal note on the House file?
Yes.
Please. We'll get that clarified as well. Any other discussion on the bill? Any other discussion? If not, then Representative Huntley renews his motion that House File 3279 to recommend the pass and place in the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
The next bill and the first one on the is House File 1467. Representative Nelson, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the House File 1467 be passed and moved to the General Register.
Okay, we've heard the motion. Representative Nelson, do you want to give a quick synopsis?
The quick thing, the reason we're here is there was a fiscal note on this, and House File 1467 deals with railroad safety. There's many miles of unmonitored track out there, and what this would do is require the Department of Transportation to apply to the Federal Railroad Administration for grants to the railroads in our state to be able to put this technology in so that we'd have monitored tracks for safety on the railroads out there. There's a $3,000 cost is what it came up, and that's what we're here for. So.
Members, I understand that the department said they could actually eat $3,000. Is that correct? Okay. Any other questions on the bill? Any questions? Representative Holbrook.
Well, in reading the fiscal note, I don't know if I misunderstood anything here, but it says that because MnDOT doesn't own or operate rail service, that they're ineligible for such grants. And that after discussion with the railroads, MnDOT believes that none will apply for these grants. Therefore, the cost to MnDOT would currently be limited to staff time required to research and set up the grant application process, but nobody's going to apply or be eligible. I mean, why would we waste $3,000 if nobody's going to do this?
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I've got Philip Qualley here from the UTU. I think he can answer that question.
You want to identify yourself for the tape, please, Phil.
Yes, good morning. Good afternoon. Philip Qualley with United Transportation Union. I would just like to clarify that the state of Minnesota and the railroads are eligible for the Rail Safety Improvement Act grants going forward in 2000 from 2008 for this Section 406 program. But the key here is that as time goes by, I believe the railroads may become interested, and I believe may well apply for this grant, technology safety system.
So, Mr. Quayle, are you saying that, that MnDOT, the state of Minnesota, is eligible as of 2008?
Yes, sir. Yes, okay. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Qualley, then why do you have the bill worded that they shall apply? Why wouldn't you have the bill worded that if the railroads are interested, then MnDOT shall apply? I mean, it makes no sense for them to shall apply if nobody's interested.
Mr. Qualley.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holbrook, we believe that as a policy statement, it is in the interests, the best interest of the state of Minnesota that the state apply, shall apply, make available the application when these federal funds are provided for. I mean, we are asking for a clear policy statement from MnDOT that with over 1,200 miles of non-signal track territory, that in western Minnesota particularly, that we ask the state to affirm that it's in our public interest, it's in rail safety's interest, that the priority that these funds be applied for in the state of Minnesota by the Class 1 operators that operate here.
I would think there would be no question that they should apply just for safety reasons.
Well, Mr. Chair, it requires a 20% match, looks like, for the from the participating railroads. And if you read the fiscal note carefully, it doesn't appear that anybody's going to apply, but we have a shall that MnDOT applies even if the railroads aren't interested. So.
Well, Representative Holbrook, if, in my district, there's a huge safety issue on one railroad crossing. It's unmarked at all, and the city of Cohasset is trying to do it, and it's taken them some effort, but Burlington Northern Santa Fe finally came through with a share of that. It's much more than 20% of the cost. So I would think that even if this would allow them to be able to participate in these at a lower cost for the railroad if they had the federal grants in place.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm not arguing with any of that. I'm arguing with the wording of the bill that says MnDOT shall apply for the grants irregardless if anybody is interested. That's what I'm arguing about.
Well, it seems to me, though, if we apply for the grants, and that would also make them interested, I would think, too, a little bit better. So, I mean, it's a cat or which would catch 22, I guess, in some respects. Any other discussion on this? Any other discussion? Representative Nelson then renews his motion to House file 1467 be recommended to pass based on the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed?
No.
And carried. Next on the agenda is Senate file 2846. Representative Portman. Is she here?
Yeah. Is this the one we have a
substitute?
Okay. The chair will move that Senate. Oh, House file. Senate file 2846. We recommend to pass and place in the general registry. And then the motion is to substitute the House language. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And so the chair will move the House file, that the amendment to Senate file 2846 be the language that appears in House file 3029. Any questions on that? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed? And carried. So we're working off the language in Senate and House file 3029. What we have is there's no fiscal note directly on this. But there is a fiscal note on a very similar bill that's in the Senate. And the savings is... Oh, we do have a fiscal note. Yeah. Do we not have that if you trust me to read it off, we do have a fiscal note. We found it. The revenues are is that there's $22,000 into the truck highway fund, and there's a savings of $22,000 in the truck highway fund. Is that true? Okay, do you want to explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is a department bill that pertains to truck weights, and I have MnDOT's staff person responsible for that issue here to explain the bill very briefly.
Yes, can you identify yourself for the tape, please?
Mr. Chairman, Gene Halverson from MnDOT. Mr. Chairman, this bill has several technical corrections in here due to some numbering changes. It also has implement a husbandry breakaway brakes, which is a technical change to correct something that was put in wrong last year and now brings us into compliance with the other brake laws. Blandon has a situation here where they were going to haul paper to Duluth on twin trailers. They have since decided that they would do it on a regular semi 53-foot trailer. And so the permit fee that was in statute was comparable to the an $850 fee, and the comparable one for a semi-trailer, single trailer, should have been $500. And so that's a correction in here just to make that's a fairness issue in the fee. And it's only involving, we've only issued four trucks to a trucking company out of Grand Rapids, so it's only four trucks. There's a correction in length on to come in compliance with the federal for saddle mounts, and that's how new trucks are delivered, piggyback one on top of another. So that's just to bring us into compliance with them. There's a part in here about civil penalties. That's a fairness issue in that currently for certain trucks, there's a 5 cents per pound for overweight over the permit weight. It makes a lot of difference in that the fee can be anywhere from $2,000 when, if you do it the way some trucks are allowed, that fee would be around $800. So it's quite a bit of difference just because some numbers were left out of the statute. Right. There's two implement a husbandry statutes for hauling. Implements a husbandry and statute are farm equipment. There's two permits for that, a $24 permit and a $120 permit. The $24 permit only has one dimension that it allows over the legal dimension, and that's width, 14.0. The $120 permit allows 14.6 wide, 14 high, and 85 long. Those are all increases. What we want to do and what we've been trying to do the last few years is these places where we have more than one permit in the same subject matter is make one permit out of it. So we're getting rid of the $24 permit. There's some old language in there that doesn't pertain much anymore, and just going with the $120 permit. And that's where the $22,000 increase comes to the Trunk Highway Fund if the same number of permits are sold that we sold last year. So that's where that amount of money comes from.
Okay, questions? No, any questions?
So,
Representative Holbrook?
Mr. Chair, the $24 to the $120 is basically by farmers that were only carrying wide loads, not tall loads or long loads. If they currently have a tall load or a long load, were they paying $120?
Sir, can you repeat your name again, please?
So it's Gene Halverson, H-A-L-V-E-R-S-O-N. Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, the $120 permit does allow 6 inches over the 13-foot-6 height. That's legal height. So it would allow up to 14 feet to operate on that permit. However, if they have an extremely tall piece of equipment, and this is farm implement dealers also. In fact, more dealers than farmers buy these permits. So if they have one that's outside of what that annual permit calls for, and that $120 permit is an annual permit, then they can get a single trip permit for $15. So anytime you have a really extremely large piece of equipment, construction equipment, farm equipment, whatever, you can get a single trip permit.
Thank you.
I noticed on page 19, Representative Holberg, that there's a repealer, and usually there's only one thing that's repealed in the back. I guess it is listed. There's a whole bunch of rules repealed. And can you just, Mr. Halverson, tell us about the rules?
Mr. Chairman, these are rules that are obsolete. They're outdated. They've been sitting in the rules there for a long, long time. They're not used anymore.
Do we save a lot of paper?
Save a lot of paper.
Oh, well, I don't know if I like that or not. I like paper. Okay. Any other questions? Representative Weston.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Halverson, can you, the 5 cents a pound overweight, is that an additional fine going in place? I didn't follow exactly what you meant by the, you said trucks, they could get a $2,000 fine and an $800 fine, and there's a new nickel a pound or a nickel a pound fine that's going in place. So can you just reiterate that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, what this does right now, currently, if you were operating and hauling heavy construction equipment, for instance, the law says that the civil penalty would be 5 cents per pound for the weight that exceeds the permit that you have. What happened is a few years ago, there was a bill put forward that allows a permit for forest products, and another one a couple years later for ag products. And those statute numbers didn't get put into the civil penalty part. So if you're hauling heavy equipment and you're in violation of the permit, it's 5 cents per pound. If you're hauling raw ag products, it could be as high as 20 cents per pound. So this is to bring it down to the 5 cents per pound to be equal with the way we've treated other permit weights or permit violations. So in reality, in fact, it is a much lesser fine.
Thank you.
Any other discussions? If not, then the chair will renew his motion that Senate file 2846, as amended, be recommended to pass and place in the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move House File 2848.
House File 2848 has been moved and recommended to pass and placed on the General Registry. Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a really simple bill. What it does is it takes additional money and puts it towards railroad grade crossings. When we were doing the bonding bill, the Minnesota Department of Transportation came forward and requested $10 million in bonding authority to upgrade railroad crossings to make them more safe. The House, the Senate, and the governor all offered $2.5 million, and that's how much we approved. But there's a significant unmet need for upgrading the safety at railroad crossings. What this bill would do is it would allocate an additional $400,000 a year to railroad grade crossing safety improvements. And it would do that by increasing the proportion of the fines that are currently collected that go to this account. Right now, it's capped at $600,000 per year. This changes it to $1 million. So it's the fiscal note would say that it's a negative $400,000 impact to the trunk highway fund because it diverts money that would otherwise go into the trunk highway fund from getting there. The bill is supported by the League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Townships.
Mr. Marks, can you explain the fiscal portion of this?
Mr. Chair, members, as Representative Hortman stated, this will have a cost to the trunk highway fund of $400,000 a year, and that $400,000 goes into this rail crossing safety account in the special revenue fund. So it's a net zero between them, but it's moving money out of the trunk highway fund into this other account.
Any questions? Any questions on this? Not Representative Faust renews his motion. House File 2848 be recommended to pass and place in the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
House File 3127. Representative Paulus, do you want to make another motion?
I sure will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 3127. Was recommended to be passed and placed in the General Register.
Representative Daffy, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon.
Just 1 second. There is a fiscal note on it. It's being copied right now. Okay. Representative Daffy, you want to give a brief overview?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members, this is the unemployment insurance bill for the year. It's a based on the product of the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council, a broad group of stakeholders, business, labor, legislators, people from the nonprofits community, and others concerned about issues around unemployment, has been amended a few times through the process. It offers opportunities for business to save some money on their unemployment by prepaying their unemployment. That also will not only do we provide them a discount, but it provides funding for the UI fund, which is in deficit and is projected to be in deficit for the next several years. There are opportunities for nonprofits and governments to look at the way they pay their unemployment insurance. And then some specific initiatives in there as well, particularly from the Senate, limiting the state's liability for unemployment insurance for folks working as PCAs and a number of other small provisions in the bill.
Questions on the bill? Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Representative Dabney or maybe Mr. Nelson, 33 states are currently in deficit in their UI. Mm-hmm. How far in deficit is Minnesota at this point?
Mr. Chair, if I can ask Mr. Nelson to come forward and answer that.
Mr. Nelson, welcome to the committee, and if you can identify yourself for the tape, please.
Mr. Chairman, members, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the legal counsel to the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, to your question, on April 6th, Minnesota was $653 million in deficit.
A follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nelson, is there any projections in the next couple of years as to where which way that's headed? And how does this bill affect that one way or the other?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, the trust fund will be in deficit. It's projected to be about $750 million at the end of the year this year. At the end of calendar year 11, it will be over $1 billion in deficit. It will reach its maximum in deficit of about $1.6 billion in April of 12, and then it will slowly start getting back, and we expect it to have a positive balance in late 2015.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And this bill does what is Representative Abbey. We don't know to what extent employers will take advantage of prepaying their unemployment tax, and that's by 4 years. They would receive a discount. But I have talked to some accountants, and they think this is a really good idea. So we're hoping it will be used and should save us from borrowing at least a few million dollars.
Okay. Other questions?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If there's a bill that Representative Dabney is carrying for the chamber, I have to support it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davis, this is after the well-known Pawlenty Dabney Angel Investor Tax Credit bill of earlier this session.
Okay, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and either for the author, Representative Dabney, or Mr. Nelson, can you give me a little more background on the prepayment? And I'm trying to understand, because I thought it was a very good rate from the federal government that we could borrow. How will we get businesses wanting to lend money to the state for less than the federal government?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, currently interest is waived under the federal stimulus law, so there is no interest on our current borrowing. However, that expires at the end of this year. Current rate would be 4.4% if we were paying, had to pay interest, which I don't know that that's such a great rate. But what this does is an employer can receive a discount if they, in effect, pay early, rather than paying over a four-year period to pay it all right up front. And then they would receive a discount. And so it would be to the employer's advantage overall to pay it early, and the fund wouldn't have to borrow and pay interest on the borrowed funds, So it works to everybody's advantage if we can get the money earlier rather than later. That's the theory.
McNamara?
Well,
follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, can you just, I'm trying to understand the discounting, because it must be less than the 4.4% when you do go to borrow, when you have to start paying, when the stimulus money quits. You're going to borrow at 4.4, but if you can get prepayment, that's a better deal. Are you, you must be discounting at less than 4.4% per annual rate?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, well, I haven't done the actual math. Over a four-year period, it's actually going to amount to a little over a 20% discount to the employer. So it's actually, they're actually getting a better, if you will, by the prepaying than the borrowing. If I'm explaining that correctly.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nelson, if I understand right, I mean, the reality, I don't know if we're going to see very many business people prepaying something 4 years in advance for a 20% discount. Truthfully, the way the agency or the state may win is if these people don't end up, they go out of business or something and have prepaid you. That's probably where you're going to make the most money, because I don't think you're going to see business people borrowing you. I mean, they're going to look at that as borrowing. I'm wondering, I hope you're not banking on much of this actually happening.
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman. It gets a little more complicated than that, but if an employer is expanding, intended to expand during the year, they get that rate at the start of the year. And if they were substantially expanding, let's say doubling your workforce from 5 workers to 10 workers, you could be much better off buying it down, and then you wouldn't have to pay tax on the 10 workers. You can actually come out ahead. Now, that's true under current law, but we're simply... But current law provides a multiplier. In effect, you have to buy it down at 125%. This year, in effect, buying it down at 100%. So it really can work to somebody's distinct advantage if their business is expanding and expanding rapidly. You'd be better off going out and borrow the money and buy down your unemployment rate and then pay those high rates now on substantially more workers. So it could work even more to your benefit.
Another follow-up, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually, Mr. Nelson, remember doing that when we first were in business 30 years ago. I remember buying it down because of the expanding workforce. But have you built into the cost to the state of Minnesota, because that could potentially have a negative impact for you, instead of collecting 1.25%, you've run some numbers on it? And just, Mr. Chair, to qualify, Mr. Nelson, you've always amazed me with your unemployment information, so this is not me questioning you. I'm trying to learn from it.
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there is a sunset on this of 3 years, and because we don't know how much it will be used, I talked to some accountants and things. They think it's a great idea, but how much it will actually be used, we don't know. But it's just one other way of trying to get more money into the trust fund as soon as we can, so we don't have to borrow as much.
Mr. Faust, Representative Faust.
Thank you. Great minds travel in the same circles, and Representative McNamara already asked my question, so thank you.
Other questions at all? Any other questions? If not, then Representative Faust renews his motion that House File 3127 be recommended to pass and place on the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Hey, Representative Hillstrom. Want to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 3310 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Representative Hillstrom makes that motion. The fiscal note is being distributed. Representative Hillstrom, do you want to give a quick overview of the bill?
Certainly, Mr. Chair and members. Previously, there was a larger vehicle crimes task force that worked on making certain that people paid their license plate tabs in Minnesota and their sales tax. However, during the days of Jesse Ventura, when the price of tabs went down to $99. We didn't have a lot of people registering their vehicles in other states and buying their tabs there. What this does is bring that back. In the first year, we allocate $191,000, and we generate $500,000, and then ramp it back up to I believe it's eight, Mr. Chair. With me is Matt Hodapp from the Troopers Association, in case you have questions. And that's the bill.
Okay, Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hillstrom. Why didn't you do the appropriation proportionately to the additional revenues? In other words, why wasn't the transit fund charged out at the same rate as the road fund is for this, given that the money's all going back? So, I mean, the net increase is far greater because the cost of the whole program is being paid for on the road side, and the revenues being brought in are just being distributed in both funds.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I said to staff, please write me a bill that does this. And I am not an expert in the transportation funding area, and so I attempted to put the money where the folks said it should go.
Well, it just, usually if you're going to do this type of thing, you try and be proportional in how you fund. It just doesn't seem right to me that all the funding comes out of the roadside for the compliance, but the funds as they come in go into both accounts.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think we probably have too many transit folks breaking the law in terms of where they register their vehicle, so it only makes sense that that's probably where the money comes from and is found. Is that kind of what you're talking
no.
about?
No. Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, because of the latest constitutional amendment that was passed, it dictates how the money is distributed, and then we further, by statute, did the distribution of metro versus rural transit, et cetera. And so I'm just wondering, because the motor vehicle sales tax is going to be a component of what the additional revenues come from, increased compliance for the motor vehicle sales tax, to the degree that the transit fund benefits from that, shouldn't they pay for the compliance initiative as well?
Mr. Chair, I guess that's probably a question for fiscal staff, maybe, if that's the way I should be doing this. Again, I just wanted to capture the money and make certain that people are complying. I really didn't have a preference on where we took the money or where the money went. It just capturing $500,000 seems like the right thing to do.
But, Mr. Representative Hillstrom, you probably don't have a great deal of flexibility on where you take the money from. I understand that there was some extra $50,000 in the special revenue fund that was available for this, and the highway distribution fund, so that you get to the $241,000 of your expenditures. It does help the general fund by $50,000 as well in the revenues coming back. The savings of the general fund. And the special revenue fund is paid back the way it looks. Mm-hmm. Does not get paid back, does it? It's a I don't know why. Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, members, the issue with the special revenue fund is that in order for this process to work, the driver and vehicle services section needs to provide additional information. When we checked with on that account, driver and vehicle services account, there was enough extra money, or there was enough balance in that account to fund this $50,000 each year. So there was not a need for additional fees or so on there.
Okay.
As to the issue of the trunk highway fund paying it, and the fiscal note actually has been in error all along, because it showed the expropriation coming from the highway user tax distribution fund. It actually comes from the trunk highway fund. But as to whether the trunk highway fund pays all or whether the transit fund would pay some, that's an issue that there could be an amendment to do that. It's not ready at this point. It probably would take a bit of work to do it, but that's a policy decision that somebody would need to offer an amendment to change if we wanted to do that.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I'm not, my intent isn't to slow up today's meeting or whatever, but it just seems to me that it should be, the roads shouldn't pay for all of the compliance factor and when the benefits accrue to both modes.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the gentleman from the State Patrol. Where do you find most of the noncompliance? Is it along the Dakotas, Iowa, or Wisconsin?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, actually, we find it all over now, all over the state. I'm running across vehicles that are registered in Oregon and are here in this state. Oregon doesn't have a highway user excise tax, and they also give you 2 years registration for $35. So we're starting to run into this with regularity from all over.
Well, Sim David.
Mr. Chair, my district borders Wisconsin and Iowa, and I just thought there's a lot of visitors.
Mr. From Chair, Montana? Representative Davids, yes, there is. Yeah.
Any other questions? Representative Hillstrom, let me suggest that you work with somebody. I think that it is an equity issue that was brought up, and I think maybe on the House floor we should probably have some opportunities to have you make it some kind of an amendment that distributes the funds fairly. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, what is the assumption we're going to raise for revenue on this new enforcement? And I'll couple a second question with this. Why have we went down to one officer? Have the deficits caused us to do this? Or if it's been such a revenue generator, why would we be at one officer?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because we had lowered tab fees when Jesse Ventura was here, we really didn't have a need to get the compliance because folks were registering them here because ours wasn't any higher than the other state. There was no financial incentive. Whereas now ours have gone back to being a little higher than other areas, and people feel an incentive to scam the system or register their vehicles elsewhere. So the revenue estimates that we have here are based on the success that they've had previously. So this group existed beginning back in 1998 through 2003, and so we just looked at the numbers that they'd had success with previously and extrapolated that information out.
And so, Mr. 566 is the savings to the state,
$566,000.
Mr. 000.
Chair.
Representative Westrom.
So, Representative Hillstrom, where are we at with the numbers? I don't recall offhand from the 99. A few years ago, they went up. What are we looking at average now?
Representative Hillstrom, do you have that number?
Representative Westrom, are you? I'm talking about the number of troopers that are working on.
No, the cost from 99. When we were at 99, we seemed to be at a level that the taxpayers would digest or was palatable. What level are we at now? That's causing this new wave of criminal activity.
I don't. Some of them are still at 99. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now we are basing the registration tabs based on the value of the vehicle. Is that what your question?
Right. Mr. Chair, I'll back up. Okay. When Ventura was here, by the way, I was here too and voted for that. So.
So did I.
We capped, I believe, the second year at $99 or less, even though they left the old schedule in place. It just said. The override was 99 was the cap. We've taken that cap off, as I recall, and so everybody's back to normal levels. Is that what the deal is? And several are over 99 now.
Mr. Chair,
Hillstrom.
Thank you, Representative Westrom. I believe if it's like an Escalade, it might be upwards of $350 for license tabs or higher, according to Representative Holberg. I don't drive an Escalade, so I don't know. Either.
I just had phone calls from people.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, this money, putting this into the troopers, it comes out of the state, the highway construction account, doesn't it? Is that where you're taking us from?
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It comes out of the Trunk Highway Fund, and primarily that's kind of where the troopers have been funded out of in the past.
Right. And so, Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, this money, if it wasn't taken for this, would go towards what? Construction projects is the traditional place for it?
Representative Hillstrom, the fiscal note says that in fiscal year 11, it's a cost of $191,000, and it brings into that fund, according to this, $454,000. So it's a net to the Highway Construction Fund as well.
That's an assumption, Mr. Chair, right? The $191,000, though, originally comes out of what would otherwise be going to construction.
Yeah, correct? Well, all fiscal notes are assumptions.
Right. And as you know, Mr. Chair, good fiscal notes have been used to kill good bills and pass bad bills. So that's the grain of salt we always carry around here.
Yeah,
so
well, we
very well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I'm just not convinced. I think we, if we're seeing a problem, we shouldn't just ignore it. I think that was the reason Governor Ventura was quite successful in campaigning on that issue, and I think we ought to start taking notice that people are saying no to the high taxes that have been put in place. So I think I didn't hear that in your testimony, and I think that's part of the message that some aren't hearing around here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we pass laws on what tax amount we think folks should pay, and that is a debate for this body to have. This bill is about people paying the tax that we've told them they have to pay. This is about tax compliance, and we do tax compliance in every other area of the budget. And so I think it's only fair that folks pay their fair share. And I encourage members to vote yes.
Sure.
One last question, then maybe Representative Holberg was getting at this a little bit. I didn't hear it. But Representative Hillstrom, last winter I took a trip on the light rail from the Mega Mall to downtown. And there was no compliance on whether I had a ticket or not on the rail. Are we going to spend some of the time in making sure that I have a ticket when I rode that light rail? I won't tell you whether I did or didn't, but is that going to be where some of these funds and time would go as well?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If it generates $500,000 for a fund, somebody might want to introduce that bill, but I'm not introducing it.
Representative Westrom, I think that there's very, very high compliance on that, because if you ever get stopped for science, you
nobody.
No, that's not true. There is enforcement on it, and you don't want to have to pay the fine, because you could ride it for many, many years.
Well, Mr. Chair, I did have a ticket, but illustrate the point.
Well, I knew you did. I never questioned.
To tell you the truth, though, and that's a different topic for a different day, but it'll probably be the last time I will ride that, because it's such a horrendous experience to get your ticket, and that day was 3 hours by time you wait in line and get your tickets and then get to where you want to go. It certainly wouldn't be preferred, but that's okay. A different topic, a different day.
Okay, we any other questions on this bill?
Being that I've always lived in Minnesota, if somebody moves from another state, how much time do they have before they have to get Minnesota plates, do you know?
Representative Hillstrom, you have that question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 60 days, Representative Carlson.
Okay. Curious. Thank you.
Representative Kahn? Other questions? If not, then Representative Hillstrom renews her motion to House File 3310. You recommend to pass based on the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carried. Representative Swales. Is that right? Representative Swales, would you like to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that House File 3386 be passed and moved to the general register.
Okay. Representative Swales makes the motion. You heard it. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this particular bill is one that I'm very proud of. It has really culminated in many years' worth of work, beginning with Representative Barb Goodwin before she retired from the House of Representatives, and a bill that I picked up from her that I introduced my first year here in the House of Representatives, dealing with home warranty issues. And the particular bill that I carried was reimbursement of attorney's fees for homeowners who were able to prevail in a court of law. However, after working on that bill for 3 years and getting a package of bills both through the House and the Senate last year, with the exception of one bill, all of them were vetoed. So as a result of that, we went back to the drawing board, and a home warranty task force was created under the direction of Mr. Charlie Durenberger from the Department of Labor and Industry. And he cannot be here today, but he has been an outstanding chair of that committee. And what they've done is take on a lot of the issues that were the genesis of those bills that came forward last year. And step by step went through and tried to address those by creating a panel of neutrals that will become kind of a remediation mechanism so that we can keep as many cases out of court as we possibly can. It was exactly a month ago, it looked like this bill was going to implode simply because many of the homeowners and homeowner attorneys were very unhappy. They felt like they had not been completely heard on the issues. So one Friday morning, I just gathered together the diverse group of the Builders Association and their attorneys, the homeowners and their attorneys, Mr. Durenberger and an attorney from Dolly, and Representative Obermueller and Representative Simon. We met for 3 hours. I took the bill, I handed it out to them, and section by section, line by line, we went through the bill. If there was any disagreement at all on a phrase, a word, a line, a paragraph, we worked through it, we discussed it, we debated it, and I can tell you that at the end of the 3 hours, I knew that it was successful because there was a pretty much shared pain around the table. And that was from the concessions and the bargaining that had gone on to make the bill something that is acceptable to all parties. So, Mr. Chair, at this point, it has gone through 4 committees. This is its 5th stop before it goes to the floor. Mr. Durenberger is committed to continue meeting with the Home Warranty Task Force in the interim. We have issues that still need to be addressed. The attorney's fee issue is still one that there is not agreement on yet, but the group is committed to continue discussing it. If you have any particular questions about the bill, Representative Obermueller is here. He really is well-versed in this. He is an attorney in this particular field, and so he knows both sides of the issue very well.
Questions on the bill? Representative Faust?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your work on this, and I appreciate what you're trying to accomplish here. I think that's very good, but I do have a question for you. On page 2, line 2.7, you've got the word, you're adding the words performance guidelines, and I'm wondering who is it that draws up the performance guidelines? Is that something that each individual contractor has to draw up, in which case then all of their subs have to agree with that, or is this something that that somebody in the state is going to draw up that everyone has to follow?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Obermueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The long and the short of the performance guidelines is at this point it's going to be on behalf of each of the individual contractors who are going to be setting it out. The goal of this, of course, is to say in your contract with the homeowner who you're building a house for, this is what I'm doing. This is what the warranty, in my opinion, means. This is what I'm going to make sure that, you know, there aren't nail pops or there aren't going to be cracks broader than, you know, a quarter inch in your basement or whatever it will be. Laying out those guidelines for them so they have an expectation of what to be. What will happen with their house. Too often these warranty cases end up in litigation because the homeowner has an expectation that's different than what, frankly, what the house was built to do, and they end up fighting over things that really aren't part of the warranty, and we find out at the end that it's litigation that shouldn't have happened in the first place. So the goal here is to lay out kind of in the front end where we are with performance guidelines so that everybody knows what's going on. And with respect to your comment for subcontractors, under current law, if those performance guidelines were incorporated into a subcontract, the subcontractor would have a chance to see that and say, I'm going to do it or I'm not going to do it. I mean, that's current law. I know where the Senate, I think, has some language in there that has more comfort language to protect that transaction there. We're still going to continue to talk about that as we go forward. And certainly, if it doesn't fix in this bill, it's something that the Homeowner Warranty Task Force will continue to work on next over the course of this summer.
Good. Thank you. Any other questions? I want to acknowledge former representative and now commissioner, Mr. Spiegel. Good to have you in the audience. This is in your department, so it's good to have you show the interest. Thank you. Any other questions?
Well,
yep. Yeah. Well, okay. I was ready to vote. You well, didn't want to talk.
Does the agency support this bill? Shouldn't we hear?
We could. You can ask that if you want.
Mr. Chair, the commissioner gave a thumbs up.
Okay, thumbs they up. Support it.
Well, I knew it did because the Mr. Dernberger has testified in other committees and has led this effort. So with the commissioner's blessings, I'm sure. Okay, any other questions? If not, then Representative Swales moves that House File 3386. We recommend to pass and place in general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Members, we're going to meet Wednesday at 11 o'clock, I think. Be a list of other bills that are in our possession that need to move forward. 11. Well, we'll make it 7 if you want. A.M.? I think 11 o'clock, I think, is the scheduled. The meeting is adjourned. Wednesday.